I'm Captain Kevin Smith, and this is Throttle Up, a radio show and podcast dedicated to the proposition that critical thinking, when employed, can dramatically improve performance in whatever we are doing, enable us to solve problems that others avoid, equip us to become thought leaders instead of followers, and provide us with the intellectual resources and moral courage to support and defend America and its Constitution. Our motto is clarify, reason, win. That is, clarify the actual, employ analytic reason, and achieve mission success. Our website, throttleupradio.com, that has all kinds of information. Also, our podcast is located there, as well as iTunes. And of course, we have a blog, so please visit our website. Our support staff, Evergroove Studios for audio engineering services. They are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and Reflections Printing for multimedia support, and they are located in St. George, Utah. Our book is Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook. It is available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. Our broadcast time on Red State Talk Radio, we are on the weekends, both Saturday and Sunday, on the main channel, that's at 7 p.m., and the Encore channel, that's at 6 p.m. Okay, welcome back to another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. And this is, well, let's see, we're coming up on mid-December. We're recording this for the December 19th and 20th weekend shows on Throttle Up on Red State Talk Radio. And of course, we have Throttle Up podcasts that you can access on a regular basis. So, we have lots of ways to get information about, well, you know, basically it's about critical thinking. How are we doing in that area of critical thinking? Are we making progress as thinking responsible people? Are we making progress or not? And that's one of the things we should be, you know, asking ourselves. And I guess we could even get into discussions about how are we doing as individuals in that regard. Okay, so what is this show about? The show is it is a continuation of what we have been doing for some time now. This is a continuing series on how to decide, and it is a very important aspect of how we think critically, how we determine certain things, what are the things that is contained in our belief and value system. And this is, in my view, this is very important stuff. Now, we're doing that against a backdrop of what's going on nationally in this election season, this post-election season, and what's going on nationally and the things that are being discussed, things that are being uncovered. Certain situations are emerging that are very troubling, and it is a time of confusion. I guess you could say that this is all about critical thinking in a time of confusion. It is extremely confusing. It is in the history of this country. It appears to me to be unprecedented in the size, if you will, the scope of the attempts to manipulate a national election. If you look at everything that has come out, you begin to see a very troubling picture. Now, one of the things that, you know, that we have to do is we have to be able to separate information, or we have to be able to categorize sources of information. What we are informed by all kinds of ways, communication, word of mouth, and that goes on from there. And we are informed. We are packages of information. We receive, gather information. We process it. We transmit it. I guess you could say that too. We try to express ourselves in terms of certain information that we have, that we think is important, that is also we think is important for us to express to others, and to try to understand together what is going on, and make sense of it, and prepare ourselves, or actually take action. We are, most of us anyway, are action-oriented people, so we would like to take the information that we have after we have verified and validated it, and do something with it. All right, so here we can look at what exactly is going on. What's going on out there is a major attempt to invade our mind space. Now, are we the sovereign owners of our mind space, of our own mind? Okay, we can think of it. We think of a mind space as those things that contain our belief and value system. These are the things that we consciously recognize as an important aspect of our existence. And so our decision here is are we the sovereign owners of our mind space or not? Do we not own our mind space? Is our mind space open to influences, nefarious manipulations by others who have a vested interest in getting us to believe something that may in fact not be true? And so our biggest challenge here is, and again, one of the crucial decisions we have to make is that who owns our mind space? Is our mind space, do we own it? Do we have that right to own our own mind space, or do we not have that right? And in many areas or realms of reality, we encounter organizations, groups, government officials that want to control our mind space, want to control what we have been given, and that control is something that we should recognize that, And I think that's probably one of the key aspects here of critical thinking is at a very fundamental level, what are we? Who are we? How is it that we function? And what are the resources that we need in order to go about our daily lives, in order to function as conscious beings? What is it? Well, we need energy and we need all kinds of things, but we also need information. We also need to know things. We need to know something about a number of things in order for us to be productive, in order for us to survive, in order for us to carry on our lineage, in order of us as human beings to avoid this extinction and thrive. Okay, so based upon this idea that we have information, we have sources of information, we gather information in order for us to do something necessary for life, are we looking at our sources of information critically? Now, here's the thing, what's going on. I think I've mentioned this before. What's going on is, in my view, we are on a collision course with destiny. And what is of immediate concern is this big question. If we do not know how to think critically, then learn. If we do know how to think critically, teach others. Propaganda and misinformation is ineffective against those who can think critically. And that's the key. That's the key to our survival as a people who embrace liberty and individuality and individual freedoms, if you will, is another way of saying that. If we are going to survive as a group of people that we call Americans that lives in the United States of America, if we are going to survive, particularly this onslaught of information warfare, we have to protect ourselves and we have to be able to fight back. And we cannot do that, in my view. That cannot be done unless we have developed a certain level of maturity with respect to being able to think critically. If we can think critically, then we can get to the bottom of what is going on and what has been going on for a very long period of time. Now, there's a lot of things that have been going on that have been, you might say, occurring under the radar, kind of a aviation or a military term there, but I think it's very apropos. What's been going on under the radar? Do we understand it? And how well have we equipped ourselves to be able to perform in this area that we call information warfare? We are now engaged in a serious battle, and the battleground is our mind space. That's the battleground. There's a very, very serious attempt through misinformation, through deception, and through censorship but a very, very serious attempt to control and alter what is it that we understand and what is it that we believe, and how easy is it to manipulate what we believe? How easy is it? And not least in importance, and maybe the most important thing that we should be considering as critical thinkers, is what are the strategies and the tactics that are being used or being employed against us? What are they? And given that we understand what they are, then we are better able to put up defenses against these attacks, information/psychological attacks that we are receiving on a daily basis, that gives us motivation for us to seek out other information sources that have not been censored. Censorship is, of course, the way of the tyrants of the world. We should be knowing that. We should have all of this stuff identified, and we should be able to pull out of our toolbox things that we can use to defeat this battle for our mind space. There is a concerted effort right now in this country, and even across the world, but a concerted effort right now in this country to control what we believe and to put forward things that are simply not true, to put forward things as facts that are fake, that are false, to put forward propositions and ideas that are extremely destructive and benefit only a very small number in the population, and all kinds of things. And so we need to be aware of what exactly is going on, and we need to be arming ourselves with the ability to think critically and the ability to figure out the most effective responses so that we can fight back. Now, just knowing something is of course important, but that may not be enough. We may also have to determine ways and figure out ways by which we can fight back, either individually or as motivated and committed groups of people that would like to preserve this freedom and individuality that we have in this country that others are trying to take away from us. Now, they may cloak this in guises of what seems like a reasonable proposition, but be very, very careful about that. And that's one of the tactics and strategies that these authoritarian and tyrannical forces utilize against, more or less against, innocent people. I wish that we would not be so innocent. We would be wise in the ways of the world and wise in the ways of humanity, and be ready for these attacks on our psyche, these attacks on our mind space. Okay, And we've talked about this before on a number of shows over the last many years, which is to be skeptical. The Five Agreements by Dr. Ruiz, a good book. The fifth agreement is be skeptical. And this skepticism, it's a healthy skepticism. Somebody says something. Somebody says that such and such an election was conducted and it was fair. It was a fair election. Be skeptical of those terms. And the first order of business would be, okay, well, don't tell me what it is. Show me the evidence and show me the mechanisms by which this thing was conducted and how quality checks were performed all along the way. What kind of quality control system do you have in place? Or in aviation, we call it a safety management system. We just don't conduct operations willy-nilly in aviation. We also have superimposed on top of all of the operations that we perform, we have a safety management system in most cases. That's true. And most organizations have a safety management system. They're even starting to incorporate the safety management system on the manufacturing side as well. And so in our election system, do we have an election integrity system in place to help us get to the bottom of any kind of mistakes, errors, falsifications, inappropriateness, whether intentional or unintentional? In a lot of cases for voting systems, tampering with the election process is almost always intentional. And what system do we have in place? What systems do we have in place? And this really goes beyond observers. We ought to have a much more rigorous and much more robust system just beyond the observers. We ought to have a thorough statistical analysis. We ought to have sophisticated AI systems in place to help us understand that what is the likelihood that this has happened? Is this a reasonable expectation of how voting systems perform? What has been the historical record in terms of that? In other words, for example, at the 11th hour, if you have a huge data dump of votes that were predominantly for one candidate, doesn't that raise a red flag? Wouldn't that then suggest that this integrity management system for your election process issues a warning? And a warning bell goes off and says, okay, this doesn't make any sense from a mathematical standpoint. There may be something wrong with something, may very well be something wrong with the data and the stuff that is coming in. It may be contaminated. There may be breakdowns, all kinds of things that could happen with a very sophisticated system like this. Now, let's talk a little bit about intentional. Okay. Let's say for the moment that, or assume for the moment, that a lot of things that we are experiencing is in fact intentional, right? What is exactly are these efforts in intending to do? What are they trying to achieve? How do they go about what they are attempting to do? What they, and we can put it this way, all right? There are, in fact, forces afoot. There are nefarious forces afoot, and we can call them nefarious. We can call them evil, if you wish. We can call them un-American. We can call them the enemy of free-loving people. Okay, what are they trying to do? They are trying to deal with our mind space. They're trying to reframe how people think. And how do they do that? They want us to think the way they want us to think, not how we should think as sovereign beings, but they want us to think more as subjects rather than citizens. All right, how do they do that? Well, in the Learn to Discern program that you can access on the Great Courses, they use interesting tactics. They use misinformation is promulgated at a very high level. It's called high volume. So there is many outlets are saying the same thing. It's kind of like all across the spectrum, all across the informational spectrum. It would be the news channels and so forth and so on. Radio, you name it, print media, all across all of it. It's a very, very high volume, and they're all saying exactly the same thing, and that ought to ring a bell with everybody. Why is everybody saying the same thing? Aren't there any other opinions out there? How do they, why are they proposing here that this is a foregone conclusion? Why are they doing that? And the other thing that they use, in addition to high volume, is they use rapid, continuous, and repetitive information content. All right, what they're trying to assert, these assertions are continuous, repetitive, nonstop for it could be for one news cycle, it could be for many, many news cycles. It could be ongoing for months, even years. And they repeat the same thing over and over and over again. Now, there is quite a bit of evidence to suggest that if you repeat something often enough that does not happen to be true, more and more people will begin to believe that, in fact, it is true. So that's one of the keys to understanding from a critical thinking standpoint what is going on. Is this stuff, is everybody speaking in unison? Is it constant, repetitive? Is it continuous? And are there other alternative viewpoints that are being expressed and considered in an open marketplace of ideas? And if we don't have an open marketplace of ideas, then what do we have? And that ought to be our big, big question here, right? So who is in control of our mind space? And if, in fact, we do not know, how to think critically, then we must learn and we must do it right away. There's no excuse behind it. If we do know how to think critically, then we need to go out and teach others. And that needs to be one of our missions. So I would suggest, frankly, and this is a rather bold suggestion, but the times are such that we need to take bold action. The first things that we can do right away is we can form groups, we can form discussion groups, we can form study groups of various sizes. And the purpose of the study group is to engage our thinking in ways in which we can all become better and more proficient critical thinkers. That's the first order of business. So that's the thing. All of us can do that. We have the opportunity through all kinds of ways today. It could be face-to-face gatherings in our local community. It could be virtual gatherings on some of the media platforms. And there's lots of audio and video platforms where we can gather together in groups. That's the first order of business. I would like to see this across the country. These small organic groups that are actively discussing ways in which we can become better critical thinkers across the board. We must be able to think critically or we will not succeed. We will be taken over by tyrannical forces. So that's the first thing that we need to do. And we can fight back. We can fight back by doing that. We can fight back by gathering together and focusing in on ways in which we can think critically and avoid being fooled by propaganda. Remember what I just said earlier. You know, if you can think critically, you cannot be fooled by propaganda and misinformation. And so that's the key to what I'm proposing and have been for quite some time. Now we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. So we're going to do we're going to have a short audio clip here. And at this point, we're going to suggest that we are actually engaged in a group discussion, if you will. We have come together and we're taking action. We're fighting back. And the first order of business is we have to be able to exercise our critical thinking skills now more than ever. And we have to help each other all become better critical thinkers. The nefarious forces, you can call them the dark forces, and there's other terms that we could use as well. They cannot affect us in any meaningful way if we can think critically. If we blindly take in and accept what they want us to believe, then we are doomed. We will face a complete disaster and annihilation. We must not allow ourselves to go there. And so we have to strengthen our ability to think critically. And so we are going to now, and the reason why I'm playing this short clip is that there are plenty of resources out there. It's not something that is difficult to find. There is lots and lots of ways that you can gather meaningful, effective, and even enjoyable information about how to think critically and go from there. So here is one example of what you can do. You can start off your discussion group with this short audio clip, or there are video clips as well. And you can then from that starting point, then you can start a conversation, continue a conversation. Learn together how to think critically. Here goes.
I'm Jeff Pinn. I teach at Northern Illinois University, and this is an introduction to critical thinking. In this lesson, we're going to talk about three things. First, what is critical thinking? Second, what is an argument? And third, what's the difference between deductive and ampliative arguments? Okay, so what is critical thinking? Well, fundamentally, critical thinking is about making sure that you have good reasons for your beliefs. What does that mean? So suppose that you and your friend are talking about who's going to be at tonight's party. And she says to you quite confidently, Monty won't be at the party. You're not sure whether or not to believe her, so it would be natural for you to follow up by asking, why do you think so? And there are a lot of different things that she might say in response. We're going to talk about three possible answers she could give. First, she might say, I can't stand him and I want to have a good time. Second, she might say, well, he's really shy and he rarely goes to parties. And third, she might say, he's in Beijing and it's impossible to get here from Beijing in an afternoon. The first response that she gives you does not give you a good reason to believe that Monty won't be at the party. The second reason, though, is a good reason to believe that Monty won't be at the party. If he's really shy and rarely goes to parties, then it's probable that he won't be at tonight's party. Similarly, the third reason also gives you a good reason to believe that Monty won't be at the party. If he's in Beijing and it's impossible to get here from Beijing in an afternoon, then it's guaranteed that he won't be at the party. And when you notice things like that, when you distinguish between good and bad reasons for believing something, you're exercising your critical thinking skills. So critical thinking is making sure we have good reasons for our beliefs. And so one of the essential skills that you learn when you're studying critical thinking is how to distinguish good reasons for believing something from bad reasons for believing something. Now, it's worth saying something about how I'm using the term good here. I'm not using it to indicate anything having to do with morality or ethics. So it's not morally right or morally good to believe something on the basis of good reasons. Similarly, it's not morally wrong or evil or wicked to believe something on the basis of a bad reason. Rather, here, what it is to say that a reason is good is closely tied to the notion of truth. So a good reason for a belief is one that makes it probable. That is, it's one that makes the belief likely to be true. The very best reasons for a belief make it certain. They guarantee it. So why does this matter? Well, the reason that critical thinking is important is because since we're rational, we want our beliefs to be true. Rational people want to have true beliefs, and they want not to have false beliefs. And the best way to be rational in this way is to form beliefs only when you find good reasons for them. Okay, that leads us to our second question, what is an argument? An argument is a set of statements that together comprise a reason for a further statement. So, for example, we can consider one of your friend's responses before as an argument. She's given you two statements, Monty's really shy and Monty rarely goes to parties, which together comprise a reason for believing that Monty won't be at the party. The statements that are the reason, we call the arguments premises. So Monty's really shy is premise one, Monty rarely goes to parties is premise two. And the statement that those premises give you reason to believe, we call the arguments conclusion. A good argument is one in which the premises give you a good reason for the conclusion. That is, the premises make the conclusion likely to be true. In that case, we say that the argument supports the conclusion. Good arguments support their conclusions. Bad arguments don't support their conclusions. So a key part of critical thinking is learning to evaluate arguments to determine whether or not they're good or bad. That is, whether or not their premises support their conclusions. The red argument is the first response that she gave. Two premises, I can't stand Monty and I want to have a good time. And the conclusion is Monty won't be at the party. And the third argument, which we'll put in purple, consisted also of two premises. Monty's in Beijing and he can't get from Beijing to the party in time, so he won't be at the party. Now, as I indicated before, the first argument is not good, while the purple argument is good. And here I can explain a little bit more about why. If you consider what the red argument's premises say, that your friend can't stand Monty and she wants to have a good time, and think about their relationship to the conclusion of the argument, you'll see that those statements don't make that conclusion any more likely to be true. The fact that your friend can't stand Monty and wants to have a good time doesn't do anything to make it more likely that Monty won't be there. It's simply unrelated to the conclusion. In the purple argument, though, the premises, if they're true, they guarantee that the conclusion is true. So they make it very probable. the truth of the premises guarantees the truth of the conclusion, and so in the purple argument, the premises do support the conclusion. Now, it's worth pointing out that the red argument, though it's bad as it stands, could be made a good argument with the addition of some background premise. So, for example, if you found out that your friend was the person who decided who was going to be invited to the party, then the fact that she can't stand Monty and wants to have a good time would give you a good reason to believe that Monty won't be at the party, because it would give you reason to believe that she didn't invite him. But as it stands, the argument is not good. Those two premises considered in themselves give you no reason to believe that Monty won't be at the party. Okay, our last topic is to distinguish two different types of arguments. So I'm going to put up here on the left the orange argument, which is the second response that your friend gave. Monty's really shy and he rarely goes to parties. On the right, we'll put the purple argument. Monty's in Beijing and he can't get from Beijing to the party in time. Both of them have the same conclusion. Monty won't be at the party. Now, as I said before, both of these are good arguments. They both do give you reason to believe the conclusion, i.e. both of them have premises which support the conclusion. But there's an important difference between the two arguments that I want to point out. If you consider the purple argument and think about what those premises say, you'll notice that if those premises are true, if Monty's in Beijing and can't get from Beijing to the party in time, then it must be true that Monty won't be at the party. Those premises guarantee the conclusion. In such an argument where the premises guarantee the truth of the conclusion, we call the argument deductive. In a deductive argument, given the premises, the conclusion must be true. Just thinking about the information in the premises in a deductive argument gives you all you need to deduce the conclusion. If you look at the orange argument, though, you'll notice that that's not the case. In the orange argument, even if those premises are true, the conclusion might still be false. Even given that Monty's really shy and rarely goes to parties, it's still possible that he'll get over his shyness and suspend his policy of rarely going to parties and unexpectedly show up. It's unlikely, but it's possible. So the truth of the premises in the orange argument does not guarantee the truth of the conclusion. Arguments like this we call ampliative. In an ampliative argument, the truth of the premises makes the conclusion probable, but doesn't guarantee it. Now, as I said, both of the arguments are good. Ampliative arguments can often be very good arguments. They're just not deductive. The premises don't guarantee the truth of the conclusion. Now, when you're evaluating an argument, it can be important to know whether or not the argument is supposed to be deductive or supposed to be merely ampliative. If an argument is supposed to be deductive, but careful consideration of the argument reveals that, in fact, the premises don't guarantee the truth of the conclusion, the conclusion could be false even though the premises are true, that's often a good reason to reject the argument as a bad argument. Whereas in an ampliative argument, to notice that the truth of the premises doesn't guarantee the truth of the conclusion is simply to notice that it's an ampliative argument. If you were to object to the orange argument by pointing out that still the conclusion could be false, you'd really be missing the point. In an ampliative argument, it's taken for granted that the conclusion is not guaranteed by the premises. Rather, what an ampliative argument is doing is giving you reasons to think that the conclusion is probable. So knowing what type of argument an argument is essential to knowing which tools to use to evaluate whether or not it's a good argument. And we'll talk quite a bit more about different tools for evaluating both ampliative and deductive arguments in future lessons. Okay, so summing up this lesson, critical thinking is making sure that we have good reasons for our beliefs, where we understand a good reason as one that makes the belief probable or likely to be true. An argument is a set of statements, which we call premises, that together comprise a reason for another statement, which we call the argument's conclusion. And in a good argument, the premises support their conclusions. That is, the premises give you a good reason for believing the conclusion because they make it probable. A deductive argument is one where the conclusion is guaranteed by the premises. If the premises are true, then the conclusion must be true. An ampliative argument is one where the premises don't guarantee the conclusion, but they do make it probable, so they can still provide you with good reason for believing the conclusion. Okay, so that ends this introductory lesson.
Okay, now that's an example of what all of us can do, not just me, but we can all be hosts of our discussion group, host of our conversation group, or our weekly get-togethers, either in person or remotely. to discuss the various aspects of critical thinking. Now you notice something here, I hope you did, is that this is really a rich subject. There are a lot of things that enter into the critical thinking mind space. It is a rich subject. It will occupy your intellect for a very long period of time. And really, and the more you get into it, the more you are able to uncover various areas and aspects and various considerations that all tie together into this thing that we call critical thinking. And I might add also complex problem solving. I like to use those two terms together every once in a while because they are very, very closely related. Critical thinking is supposed to help us do something, not just make us more intelligent. We would like to use that intelligence to do something. And one of the ways, and in fact, the most important thing that we can do is to solve complex problems. And critical thinking can help us do that with some additional considerations along the way. That's why we kind of like distinguish them into two separate subunits, but there is a fair amount of crossover between the two. Okay, now here is an assertion or a premise. I'm going to read this. This happens to show up on YouTube. It's about the U.S. elections. It says here that states certify results after ensuring ballots are properly counted and correcting irregularities and errors. So that is an assertion, that is a proposition. And are we going to accept that, or are we going to look for some kind of an evidence trail that supports that particular argument? And that could very well be one of the discussions that you have in your discussion group. Let's throw that out there, or other similar kinds of assertions that we have seen recently. Let's throw that out there and let's look at it critically. Okay, let's say, okay, ensuring, by what mechanisms are we employing to ensure something? Is it just haphazard? Is it all ad hoc, or do we have a voter integrity system in place that can perform quality assurance with respect to the data that we have collected, processed, and reported? What is the quality assurance system in place that we can then state with some credibility that we have ensured the accuracy of this process? And that's a very good point of argument, a very good place by which we can kick off our discussion groups, a very good place where we can engage others in a meaningful conversation about this thing that we have. And how do we deal with all of the reported irregularities? First of all, do we consider them to be real, or do they, let's put it this way. All of the reported irregularities that almost everyone has become aware of, and there are many. There are stop counting. There are people not allowed in certain rooms or spaces. All just on and on and on and on. Irregularities after irregularities. Does all of that give us pause in terms of why are we seeing all of these irregularities if we have a robust system in place that can perform quality assurance checks in real time and prevent massive errors from occurring or prevent the collapse of a system? And I would say that, well, probably we don't have such a thing. And I would say that we probably need to to have such a thing. We probably need that more than anything. So I'm going to finish up with in the few minutes I have left to begin a discussion on critical thinking. The critical thinking ideas that I have expressed in my book, Critical Thinking Essentials, as well as in other places, is based upon the motto. The motto is clarify, reason, and win. What does that mean? It means that we clarify the actual. We clarify what actually is going on, not what someone said is going on, but we have verified, we have clarified, we have validated, we have established a meaningful view of reality. Our model of reality is, in fact, accurate because we checked it for accuracy. And so we clarify the actual. We clarify what actually is or has occurred, not what some biased reporting mechanism has wants us to believe. And this becomes a very, very important aspect of critical thinking. And we have to be able to clarify the actual. And so the way we do that, first and foremost, is we establish that as our mindset. That becomes part of our mind space. Where is the clarification of the actual? When does that occur? Has that occurred? Are we comfortable with having done so? If we cannot say with a good conscience, if we cannot say that we have clarified the actual, then we need to go back and we need to do such a thing. We need to clarify the actual. And there's ways to do that, kind of like seek and you shall find. There's lots and lots of ways for us to determine what actually did occur or what actually is occurring or what is most likely to occur. And that becomes a major component, if you will, a major feature of critical thinking, being able to think critically in a world. And often I see that the world has gone completely insane. Often I know I'm laughing, but it's not all that funny, frankly. But what I'm seeing right now is that the world has gone completely insane, and we need to bring back our some semblance of sanity, and we need to all embrace critical thinking going forward. So that's my recommendation across the board for all of you, is to start a critical thinking discussion group and do it right away. We do not have any time left. We have to do that. And that's your assignment for the week, is to start a critical thinking discussion group. And there's all kinds of ways for you to get that information, the resources necessary for you to carry on. We'll cover more of that next week. Have a good week and a Merry Christmas to all of you. Well, that went fast. So this is a close of another show, another Throttle Up. And before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.